Hello, and welcome to Ravensdale Revisited. I'm Crystal Boyd, a member of the Ravensdale Historical Society. In this first part of a two-part episode, we're stepping back into the early days of Ravensdale, when it was less a city and more an ambitious idea taking shape on the western edge of Minneapolis. At the center of that story is Andrew B. Robbins, a man whose vision quite literally laid the groundwork for the community. From his grand estate overlooking Lower Twin Lake to the streetcar lines he helped build by hand, Robbins wasn't just the town's founder, he was its driving force, setting a tone of hustle, risk-taking, and civic pride that would define Robbinsdale's earliest years. But this episode isn't just about one man. It's about what it meant to lead a small, growing town at a time when the lines between business, politics, and daily life were often blurred. Being a small-town mayor or village president, as they were first known, was never just a ceremonial role. These were builders, boosters, and sometimes battlers, shaping everything from roads and rail lines to law enforcement and local culture. Whether it was Thomas H. Gerling funding infrastructure with saloon taxes, Charles Schuller facing down the state over liquor laws, or the unforgettable Henry Uglum stirring controversy and even returning to office after going to prison, these early leaders governed in a hands-on, deeply personal way that feels almost unimaginable today. In part one, we'll meet the characters who guided Robbinsdale through its earliest decades: immigrants, entrepreneurs, Civil War veterans, and hometown originals. Their stories are colorful, sometimes contentious, and always revealing, not just about the town they served, but about the kind of leadership small communities demanded. This is the story of Robbinsdale before it became a city, when every decision helped shape its identity, and when being a mayor meant rolling up your sleeves and getting to work. And now, here's the president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society, Pete Ritchie, with the mayors of Robbinsdale.
It's fitting that our first mayor was Andrew B. Robbins. He purchased 90 acres on the west side of Lower Twin Lake, and he platted much of the area as Robbinsdale Park. He made his first subdivision over there, and he reserved 20 acres of lakeshore just for his estate. And this was a sprawling, beautiful thing with a long drive up to his grand mansion with its tower and its turrets and its little drive-through for the carriages, and then a carriage house out back. So he got that thing built in 1890, and then he went to work opening various businesses. He opened up the Northern Car Company, so he was building little streetcars out here in Robbinsdale, and then he laid the track. And we're told from an account of the Shumways that he actually got out there and helped lay the track himself. And the tracks went from about where 42nd and West Broadway is, and then they went over to Hubbard, and they went down Hubbard originally, and they would get to 36th. Then they would go on the south side of Crystal Lake, and they would go over to Thomas Avenue in Minneapolis, and you would catch the Minneapolis streetcar from there. But that was his own streetcar line. He had a couple of manufacturing ventures. He had a factory that made, it was called Hubbard Manufacturing, and they made chairs, and they also made these foldable boxes. The factory burned down. The streetcar barn burned down. When we became a village, we didn't have mayors, we had village presidents. So I guess it would be better to call him the first village president. That was in 1893 when he got elected. And even in his very first term, Robbins would often get distracted with his political ventures. So he would get elected as mayor, then he would decide he would run for Congress, or he would become a state senator, or he became the state surveyor. So the second mayor is Thomas H. Gerling. And we know lots about Thomas H. Gerling because he was a publisher. And one of the first things he did is he started a newspaper called Picturesque Robbinsdale. And we happen to have bound copies of Picturesque Robbinsdale. It ran from 1893, when Robbinsdale becomes a village. One of the issues is Robbinsdale is a village. And it runs through 1895. It's generally about four sheets long. A lot of times they would not just feature local news, but they would feature the news of the world. But the news from Robbinsdale was always fun to read. When Thomas Gerling was mayor, and I should mention Thomas Gerling was an immigrant, so he was born in England in 1865, so he had a considerable impact as a publisher. one of the first things he did when he became the village president is he said, well, we've got some thriving saloons in town, and we'll tax those saloons, and we'll use that money to cut down the hill that's above Crystal Lake, because we want to make it easier for the ox carts and the farmers that are bringing their produce down to the market in Minneapolis. So he used the saloon fund tax to cut down that hill. It was actually $2,000 that they managed to raise from that saloon fund. Minneapolis had various blue laws, so the saloons would all have to close on Sundays, and the good folks from Minneapolis that were feeling thirsty would come out to Robbinsdale, and we had five or six saloons down there on the south end of Crystal Lake, and I believe they went to Keegan's Lake in Golden Valley.
There was a brewery, yes, on Keegan's Lake, kind of right along the lake when you go on 55 East on Olson Memorial Highway East, and you cross that lake on the south side of that. There were some breweries and saloons there too, because like Pete said, we were just outside the city limits, just outside the Minneapolis police jurisdiction. So things are a little rowdier, a little more fun on that side of the border.
I remember reading about boxing matches taking place at Keegan's Lake as well.
I don't know, boxing, dancing, drinking, a whole lot of fun activities.
Yeah, the suburbs used to be more fun than the city. You know, nowadays people come out and sleep in these bedroom communities and go into the city for their fun. But back then they came out here where the good times were to be had. And Thomas Girling went on to have a very active political life. He ran for Congress and he served in the Minnesota legislature. He ran a bus company for a number of years. He was involved in real estate, and he made enough money at various times that he helped actually pave Rockford Road out of his own pocket. He was a big booster for transportation. In compiling our list here of who was mayor when, we know that Thomas Girling was born in 1865, was elected in 1896. At various times, they changed the term in office from 1 year or 2 years. I think 2 years is the longest the terms ever are. But our next mayor is named John W. Hayes. He was born in 1860 in Ontario, Canada. We don't know which town, just Ontario. And we don't know a whole lot else about John W. Hayes other than he had previously served as Robbinsdale's village recorder. And then in 1900, Andrew B. Robbins comes back from the legislature and he runs for village president again, and he's elected in 1900. John W. Hayes is then elected a year later as the village president. My guess is Robbins got appointed as state surveyor and had to go.
So let me see if I've got this right. It was Andrew B. Robbins.
Right.
Thomas Girling,
yep.
John W. Hayes the first time,
yep.
Back to Andrew B. Robbins,
right.
And then John W. Hayes again.
Right. We're just going to go back and forth with that. So our next one is Gustav, although everybody knew him as Gus. Gustav Julius Urban, and he's born in 1869. So Gus Urban was an employee of J.J. Coulter's meat market. So that was the very first meat market here. Urban becomes the sole owner of the meat market until 1922 when Kurt Hoffman buys it. Gus is a great big old guy. He's got a huge mustache. Jolly big old guy who is always out fishing. We've got lots of pictures of him around the Historical Society where he's got fish laid out in front of him in the snow. And he's got a big smile on his face. And he's really proud of that. So Urban enjoyed fishing in the Brainerd area. After he retired, he bought 80 acres of lakeshore property for $850. Over the years, he sold quite a few small 50-foot lots to his Robbinsdale pals and business partners. So there's like a little Robbinsdale up there on Cross Lake. Urban's house, which I've seen a few pictures of, sat about where, well, Robbinsdale Marine isn't there anymore, but it's Ace Hardware's garden center. And his house sat right there. And if you look at Ace Hardware and look at the top of the building, you'll see that it says Urban Block. So that's kind of his legacy that's still here in Robbinsdale. We have the Urban Block. So he owned the meat market. He owned that building. He was doing pretty well for himself.
What I like about Gus Urban is this big oil painting. You can come in and see it. He looks like a big meaty guy who would love a pork chop, like he enjoyed his business. And is that the same meat market that's there today?
It's the same place. It's the same building, just a different owner. When I see the earliest pictures of the meat market, it looks like it's sided. When Gus Urban takes it over, they get a brick facade on it. He sold it in the 1920s. So our next mayor is Henry Scott, and I'm sure he was related to some people that were involved in the grocery business here in Robbinsdale. We got another immigrant born in 1843 in Hampshire, England, and he was elected in 1906. So Urban serves from 1904 to 1906. There's a nice clean term there. Mr. Scott also served as a justice of the peace.
Ooh, this next one looks exciting.
Well, I thought he was exciting. So Charles Schuler, and he started in the farm machinery business on what's now West Broadway in 1898. He had been raised on a farm in Crystal, and after living elsewhere for a while, he came back to Robbinsdale. In 1904, he erected a store, a little building on 41st Avenue North and West Broadway. And the Schuler family had five children, and they lived in the 11 rooms above the store. So it was a little bit bigger building. And when I see old pictures of this, two-story brick building, fine-looking place. In those days, there was such a thing as horse harnesses and stove black and kerosene lanterns and buggy whips and wagon wheels. And eventually he started selling automobile parts, but he also sold farm implements and binder twine and grindstones and all the things we associate with being out on a farm. And he had a good business there. And up on the top of the building, he had what they called a Flying Dutchman. And it was a corn seed that people would buy. And it was always a picture of a sort of a fat, jolly guy. And he would have wings. I remember reading an old letter where a woman is talking about how she's brought her daughter to downtown Robbinsdale. They're on one side of the street and her daughter's saying, "Look, Mom, there's an angel. There's an angel on top of that building." But no, it was just the Flying Dutchman holding his big ear of corn with his wings up. And then when I'm looking at these old postcards of Robbinsdale, if you look really hard, you can see the Flying Dutchman up on top of his building.
Now, this is our first homegrown mayor, right?
Yeah, well, since he's grew up on a farm here in Crystal, and there was no Robbinsdale then, that's pretty much got to make him our first homegrown mayor. So during his term as mayor, Schuler was accused of allowing the village to sink into ill repute. He just wasn't enforcing the liquor laws. And so the newspapers reporting that the town was divided to a child into factions. They either agreed with Mayor Charles Schuler that everything was fine, and the village council had said everything's fine. But then there was a whole portion of the town that said, you know, we want to be a law-abiding village. We want to be able to depend on our village officials to enforce the liquor laws. Otherwise, we're going to have drunken louts all over the streets, and it's going to be a road to perdition. The authorities were being accused of being in league with evil, and the dispute got to be such a thing that the Minnesota Attorney General, David F. Simpson, issued an ultimatum. He told Mayor Schuler that he must either rigidly enforce the liquor laws or resign. And Simpson, you know, he kept getting complaints, and Schuler's like, "I'm not resigning." And so there was a hearing that was held in St. Paul on August 18th, and the attorney general asked the mayor to resign at the hearing and threatened to begin proceedings against the mayor on the grounds of malfeasance. So Mayor Schuler is prepared to fight the attorney general in court, and the feelings were running high. And there's always this account of these people having an argument in downtown Robbinsdale about the liquor laws not being enforced. And one of the councilmen faints, you know, because he's so upset. He faints on the spot and they have to revive him. And T.A. Tyler fainted on the street corner while discussing this matter with residents. At a rowdy town hall meeting held on August 25th, the father of the village, Andrew B. Robbins, rose to restore order, beseeching the crowd, "Gentlemen, let us act in a business-like way. Our town has been given much ill repute over this matter. Let us not besmirch it any further." And so the liquor trouble just goes on, and it's finally settled in September of that year after another hearing with the Minnesota Attorney General. The village council promised that it would appoint a special policeman to keep watch and ensure the laws against selling liquor were strictly enforced. None of this did any damage to Schuler's hardware business, which just continued to thrive. I think their building actually burned down. Yeah, in the winter of 1925, there was a big fire, and their beautiful brick building burned down, and they were left homeless. Schuler eventually teamed up with another guy named Schlosser, and we had Schuler and Schlosser Appliances, and a lot of people still remember their little building, which is near Sacred Heart Church, is still standing on the corner there of 41st and West Broadway. Schuler and Schlosser, go ahead and say that. Our next mayor was Fred Webb, and he was born in 1849 in Thames, Oxfordshire, England. He's elected in 1910. Webb suffered a stroke of paralysis and died in office. As far as I know, he's the only mayor that has ever died in office. Our next guy is George O. Johnson, who had been a volunteer fireman, and he previously served as a trustee for the Village of Crystal, a treasurer for the Village of Robbinsdale, and an officer of the Crystal Brooklyn Cemetery, which is just up the road on West Broadway. I think it's at about 77th. Our next mayor is A.W. Hawkins, and he was elected in 1912, and Hawkins was with General Ulysses S. Grant at the start of the big campaign in the Civil War, and was said to have been the first to plant the Union flag on the cannon of a Confederate stronghold in Belmont, Missouri. Hawkins was a pioneer resident of Robbinsdale. He enlisted in the Union cause at the age of 21 and served as a lieutenant in the 7th Iowa Regiment. He figured prominently in the battles of Port Henry, Shiloh, and with General Sherman. At the Battle of Belmont, the color bearer of the regiment refused to carry the colors, so Hawkins volunteered. Hawkins was a private at the time. General Grant's forces routed the enemy in the first battle of his southern campaign. Hawkins was the first to cross the line and planted the Union flag on the cannons of the Confederates. As a result, he was made lieutenant and served the remainder of the campaign in that position. So what we really know about this guy was he served in the Civil War and somebody kept track of his deeds. His deeds as the mayor of Robbinsdale have been lost to the misty dust of time.
So for all you Civil War enthusiasts out there, if you know A.W. Hawkins, let us know.
That's right. There's always somebody who knows far more about the Civil War than you ever will. Our next mayor is W.H. Johnson. Elected in 1914, Johnson organized a Robbinsdale branch of the American Red Cross and spearheaded relief efforts in Robbinsdale during the First World War. Then we have William Saunders, born in 1864 in Illinois. Saunders was an early snowbird. He spent winters in Fort Myers, Florida with Mrs. William Saunders. She was an active member of the Robbinsdale Library Club, so chances are we've got a picture of her around here, even if we can't find a picture of William Saunders.
She might even be dressed up like George Washington.
So our next guy is Thomas B. Howard, who figures as a giant in Robbinsdale history. Howard was the president of the first Robbinsdale State Bank from 1921 to 1953, and he was a charter member of the Lions Club. Howard bought the lumberyard on 42nd and Hubbard Avenue back in 1913. For many years, the Howard lumber wagon used to roam around the town, but Mr. Howard also had an onyx coal truck, and it was a strange kind of art deco thing, and it was jet black. That's what would bring you your coal, but it doesn't even look like a normal truck. Like the engine must have been underneath, and the driver sat right at the very front. People still talk about the Howard Lumber wagon because it was one of the last things that would go up and down the street that was horse-drawn. That was until the 1940s when they had a big fire, and sadly, the horses perished in the fire, and Peter Kimball was the teamster. He's probably remembered because he would go up and down these streets delivering loads of lumber to people that were building houses in the 20s, 30s, even the 40s. He would give kids a ride on the lumber wagon. Howard was also somebody that Captain Billy liked to make fun of, and he would mention in his magazine that he was playing poker with Tom Howard, which, from everything we know about Tom Howard, he did not drink and play poker during Prohibition, but I think Captain Billy thought it was loads of fun to rib him and mention him in the magazine. So Howard's born in 1880 in Mauston, Wisconsin, and he was elected in 1920. After Howard passed away in the 50s, his wife Alma Howard ran the lumber company right up into the 1970s, and by all accounts, she was a force to be reckoned with. The Howard Lumber Company was prone to fires, so there was a whole bunch of big fires. You got this lumber yard, it's right next to the train tracks. Trains are coming up and down the tracks, and they're belching smoke and sparks as they come, and so the Howard Lumber Yard burned down at least 3 times. The last one was in 1973, and they rebuilt every time. And Alma, whenever the lumberyard would burn down, would go to the newspapers or anybody would listen and insist that it was a firebug or a pyromaniac that was busy burning down the lumberyard. There were so many other explanations, but she was convinced that this was being done by somebody on purpose. So Alma Howard is also remembered as a civic leader. She was president of the Howard Lumber Company after Howard's death. Her home, built around 1915 at 4100 Quail Avenue, is still a home that a lot of people really admire in town. It's got a Prairie School of Architecture sort of feeling. It's rumored that it was sketched by Frank Lloyd Wright, and people just love to say that, oh, this house was built by Frank Lloyd Wright. I can't find any evidence that that's actually the case, but it is a nice Prairie School house, just a couple blocks from the Historical Society. And then we get what could be the greatest Robbinsdale mayor of all, the most infamous Robbinsdale mayor of all. So Henry Uglum was in the real estate business, and he was another one of these guys that Captain Billy loved to make fun of, usually standing out in front of City Hall with a funny hat and a cigar in his mouth. Uglum defeated Tom Howard and F.D. White to win the three-cornered fight for mayor. I don't know how many three-cornered fights for mayor we've had in Robbinsdale. A study in contrast would be our latest mayor's race, where Brad Sutton won the mayor's office in Robbinsdale unopposed. Uglum defeated Tom Howard and F.D. White. Uglum had 338 votes. Howard had 250. And White took in 213. And so Uglum immediately went to work persuading the city of Minneapolis and Robbinsdale's citizens that a merger of the two and annexation would be advantageous. In September, petitions were circulated. They just needed 100 signatures in order to get this vote onto the ballot. It wasn't the first time he tried this. He tried it a few times. So in 1926, Uglum's arrested for embezzlement. I think he'd tried to get us annexed to Minneapolis at least twice. And he always had enough votes. They always had a majority. This was tried a number of times. But you needed two-thirds. So a simple majority wasn't enough to have the city annexed. So he's arrested for embezzlement and larceny. He was convicted of stealing over $4,000, and Uglum was sent to Stillwater Prison to serve 10 years. But he won parole in 1932. Uglum was elected as mayor for a second time in 1944. So he's completely reformed. He comes back to Robbinsdale. Everybody, you know, has forgiven him, and he gets elected to mayor again. But before the end of that two-year term, he was forced to resign when it was discovered that he was living in Minneapolis. This is a guy who fought for Robbinsdale to be annexed in Minneapolis.
Oh, Uglum.
Yep. And what's funny is I know that his family took over the real estate business, and I don't think there was a whole lot of ill will toward him, because you don't run a real estate business that's called Uglum Realty. People don't like you. I mean, the whole point of real estate is that people trust you and you're their realtor. And so somehow he managed to retain the goodwill of the citizens of the city. So our next mayor is Harvey A. Morse, and he's born in 1883 in Peabody, Kansas. He's elected to mayor in 1927, and Morse is remembered as the founder of the Lions Club and former president of the Charter Commission. He also served the Northside YMCA for 25 years. Morse lived at 4031 40th Avenue North and worked as a secretary for the Carter Mayhew Manufacturing Company. Our next mayor is Clyde F. Burfiend. And so he's born in 1881 in Minneapolis, and he's elected in 1929. Burfiend was an advocate of the annexation to the city of Minneapolis. When the proposal failed to gain the necessary support, he appealed for a recount. During his term as mayor, Burfiend had Edward M. Peterson, the treasurer of Crystal Village, arrested on traffic charges. Peterson sued Burfiend for $1,000 on the ground of malicious persecution. Hennepin County District Court sided with Peterson and granted acquittals. So there was apparently some bad blood between these two guys, these city officials, you know.
Well, maybe it was a stressful time. It looks like he was in office from 1929 to 1931. So now we're getting into the Great Depression.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, it must have been a great way to raise revenue. I think we were a speed trap for a while. When I look at pictures from that time of our little police force, we had two motorcycle cops. And the picture that I remember is they're parked out in front of what was the Crystal and later became the Robin Theater. So I'm sure we were a speed trap for a long time. William Randall, born in 1880 in Minneapolis. He's elected in 1931. He lived at 3939 Regent. Mr. Randall and his wife and three daughters, Harriet, Agnes, and Dorothy. The Randalls were longtime members of the First Congregational Church, later the Robbinsdale UCC. Their son, Willard, is remembered as one of Robbinsdale High School's first great wrestlers. Our next mayor is T.A. McKenzie, And we have another immigrant again, born in 1865 in Edinburgh, Scotland, and elected in 1933. So he comes to America in 1898. He was a former member of the Canadian Royal Mounted Police. So it's our first and only Mountie Mayor. And he served with the British Army in Egypt. He served on the village council for 3 years and made his living as a traffic manager for Janie Semple Hill and Company. And I think they were a great big hardware interest in Minneapolis. Mackenzie lived at 3315 Abbott Avenue North. And I'm trying to imagine his accent at the city council meetings, or, you know, what does it look like when this, you know, Scottish military Canadian Mountie gets mad and yells at the council. So our next mayor is William J. Kranz. And there's a relationship here with the Kranz Construction Company that I've never quite teased out, but I'm sure that's the same family. After he was elected as its president, Kranz served on the village council from 1928 to 1934. A veteran of World War I, he was a lifetime member and post commander of the Westfall American Legion, post 251. Kranz lived for many years at 4038 Lake Road. Many complaints had been received by the council about the water quality. I think they're still receiving complaints about that, which was being obtained from Minneapolis. Under Kranz, the village purchased land from Miss Edith Robbins, who was, of course, Andrew B. Robbins' daughter, for $18,000 at 41st and Hubbard. Mass meetings were held, and on August 14, 1936, Kranz and the village council, which at the time was Oscar Johnson, Hess Linderholm, William Ambrose, and Charles Wallace, and they voted unanimously to install a well and a water tank. And work began on October 18, 1937. In September 30, 1938, the Minneapolis Tribune reported the city council on September 19th had approved the new home rule charter as presented by Ralph F. Peterson, chairman of the Charter Commission. The Charter Commission had been at work for a long time drawing up the charter for the village, and on November 7, 1938, the vote to change the village to a city was carried, and on December 8, 1938, at 8 p.m., the new charter was officially adopted, and the city of Robbinsdale was born. So we'd been a village since 1893. 1938, we become a city.
8 p.m., that's so specific. I hope everybody goes out at 8 p.m. on December 8th.
When I looked at old newspaper articles, they made such a big deal about us, you know, becoming a city rather than a village. And Robbinsdale was putting on its big boy pants. And they had this ceremony that was the burial of the village. And so they marched down the main street carrying a coffin because they were burying the village and they were becoming a city. And yeah, they made a big deal of it and had a lot of fun with it. During the 45 years of history before that, Robbinsdale had been served by village presidents and village boards. Most of the folks were commonly referred to as mayor, but the title of village council president didn't officially become known as mayor and the trustees as aldermen until after the home rule charter was approved. Our next mayor is Joseph William Roche, born in 1889 in Winnesheek, Iowa, and he was elected in 1938. Another World War I veteran, he was an avid trout fisherman and first Robbinsdale State Bank president. He served as the village clerk before he was elected to the office as mayor. He held the office for 3 terms, and he was fond of telling people how he was elected to his 3rd term the same year that Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected to his 3rd term as president of the United States. And so Roche served as president of the Robbinsdale Businessmen's Association. Roche lowered property taxes and is remembered for organizing elaborate Memorial Day parades as the 4th commander of the Westfall American Legion post 251. All these guys at some point, I think it was just a stepping stone from being the commander of the American Legion to becoming the mayor of Robbinsdale. I think we have at least 6 of them. Strangely enough, after Roche, you know, completes his 3rd term as mayor, Henry Uglem comes back, and so we've already sort of talked about him, but he was born in 1887 in Cerro Gordo, Minnesota, which sounds like a place in New Mexico rather than Minnesota, but he's elected again in 1944, and during his 2nd appearance as mayor of Robbinsdale, Uglem was generally the lone city council minority vote. On September 14th, 1945, Uglem presented a community purse containing over $230 to Mr. and Mrs. Howard J. Hollister so that they could attend the launching of a U.S. Navy destroyer named for their three sons killed in action. Uglem was ousted by the city council after he transferred his residence to 1814 Morgan Avenue North in Minneapolis, but there's pictures in the Minneapolis Tribune of him shaking his fist at the photographer saying he won't go. He's going to be mayor of Robbinsdale, and it doesn't matter that he lives in Minneapolis. It's close enough. Our next mayor is Hezard Hess Linderholm, born in 1904 in Kandy, Ohio County, Minnesota, and he's elected in 1946. And he served as acting mayor after Uglem was ousted, a longtime Robbinsdale resident. Linderholm was a city council member and a volunteer fireman for many years. So our next mayor is the legendary Charles O. Wallace, born in 1900 in Sloan, Iowa. He was elected for the first time in 1947. Wallace moved to Robbinsdale with his family in 1900. Wallace was the village recorder in 1937, and he later became Robbinsdale's first city clerk. He held the office from 1938 to 1945. He served his first stretch as mayor from 1947 to 1954. Wallace formally dedicated a new fire and police station on Hubbard Avenue in 1949. So as part of the ceremony, a siren blew and firemen marched from their old home behind City Hall on Broadway to the new quarters on Hubbard. Free coffee, donuts, and ice cream were distributed to the public, and Robbinsdale and Anoka city bands played. Wallace handed over huge keys to Police Chief Matthew Spurzum and Fire Chief Frank Chevney. And today, the building is used as the Hubbard Transit Station.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one. Every Saturday to see our friends in the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.